Welcome to Jewish History with Rabbi David Katz, connecting the human side to Jewish history. For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.
Okay, folks, this is a Friday week if you're in the rabbi business, so I gotta do the Chayyim this week, I see, which I'm happy to do, but there is no way I'm gonna do justice. I keep saying that over and over again. These are long and very, very interesting subjects. And who's got the time? I got school later on today. I got a Shabbat Shiva drasha to put together. I got a lot of things I'm trying to put the sukkah up. It's that time of the year. And it's a shame because the Chayyim is a very, very interesting situation. But I'll share whatever I can within the context of a few minutes. It's one of my favorite books. Today I'm doing the biography of the author of the Chayyim, Rabbi Avram Danzig. Meaning he was a guy named Avram who lived in the city of Danzig. Danzig is in the port city in the Baltic, you know. Now it's part of Poland. It used to be part of Germany and Poland. So this is a rabbi who lived in Eastern Europe, especially Lithuania, Vilna, in the second half of the 1700s and early 1800s. He lived from 1748 to 1820. So what was he, 72 or 73 when he died, right? Sometimes you have interesting biographies of people because their lives were interesting. Like last week, you have Jonas and Avishai. It's just a very interesting set of circumstances in his life. And sometimes you have other people that their life circumstances are not necessarily so interesting. They're not boring, but not interesting. But their fame lies in their writings. And that's certainly the case with Avram Danzig. No question about it. This is someone who was born, like I say, in Poland, in Western Poland, in the middle of the 1700s. Very interestingly, he's up north near, off the Baltic Sea, near Hamburg and those places, near Lithuania, actually. And he went to learn in Prague, which is far away, as a kid. His father, as I recall, was exactly his role model. Father was a Talmud Chacham, guy knew how to learn. He was a businessman. As you know, is an old tradition that if you don't need to become a rabbi, you don't. Many the great Gedolim were like that. Why would you want to be a Rav? Be a Balabas and learn Torah, if you know how. And I remember he said somewhere he had his father had 10 sons. In other words, he's one of 10 siblings, Chayyim. And the father knew how to learn. And each one of his kids, basically, he raised to, on the one hand, be in learning, and number two, go into business. So it's a perfect world. Nobody has to support you. You can tell the Balabatim where to go. Nobody can boss you around. You want to give a shiur? Give a shiur. You want to, you know, paskin a shayla? You know, go do it if you're able to. And, these are the type of people with a certain elite from yesterday. So you put in a lot of time every day in learning, but you also put in a lot of time every day in business. You can't be a successful business person unless you devote yourself head and heels into the business. So this son of his, Avram Danzig, went to learn as a young boy, about 12, 13, that's what he did in those days in Prague. You know, in those days, you just walked, or you took a horse and wagon, went hundreds and hundreds of miles away to go to a Malkum Torah. This is Prague during the period of the Nodav Yehuda, when things were black and white, meaning hot and cold. Half the city was already becoming not from, for a whole bunch of reasons. The other half of the city was pretty doggone from. And you still had 9 or 10 yeshivas flourishing in Prague during this era. And this boy, Avram Danzig, he was like 12 years old or something like that, went to learn in the yeshiva of somebody who was famous in his day but is completely forgotten today, Rabbi Yosef Lieberman, who we would say today was like a mechina. You understand? He specialized in teaching young boys, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, that sort of thing. And that's what he did. So he went through what we would say today, the Prague mechina system. And then, after he finished that, he went to the Yeshiva Gedola, which was the Nodav Yehuda, where he learned for a couple years, not that long. He learned for a couple years by the Nodav Yehuda, not that long. And he got smicha or something like that. I think he got smicha's chaver. You know, in Eastern Europe, in Central Europe, I mean, they had a whole system. First you're a chaver, and then your a Rav, and then finally Moreno Harav, or something like that. It was like a system. Basically a BA, an MA, and a PhD. I know it sounds funny, but that's really what it was like once upon a time. And so, remember, he's not planning to be a rabbi. He's just learning. When he's 18, he gets married. That's what you did in those days. Maybe he stayed another year in Prague. Maybe he didn't. But eventually moved back to Vilna. I think his wife's family was in Vilna, I believe. But then he spent the rest of his life there. So this is a guy who lives in Vilna. Let's put this together. He was born in 1748. So from the late 1760s until 1800, imagine him as a businessman in the town of Vilna. This is during the time of Vilna Gaon. Now you might say, oh, Vilna, time of Vilna Gaon, was Ir Molei Chachamim Besofrim. Everybody was learning Torah on the street. Even the bartender was a Bucky B'Shas, all the rest of it. Just the opposite. This period was one in which the Hamonim knew nothing. Whatever they did by... Because your father did it, your mother did it, that's what you did. You know, mimetic Judaism. It was a small elite of big scholars, as always was the case. The Vilna Gaon was in a class by himself. I'm not counting him. But he himself didn't interact with others. He had like a small class, called small minion. And here's this person who was for 30-some years, that's a long time, just a businessman, a merchant, traveling all over Europe, because that's what you're going to do when you be successful in business. You got to go. He writes this. You got to go to Frankfurt. You got to go to Leipzig. You got to go all over the place where the major fairs are. Being a merchant, a successful business person, once upon a time. So this is not somebody who lives all his life in a Dalet Amos, but is all over Europe. Is a sophisticated, but very frum. You know, like a real Talmud and Behuda, real frum guy, even though he's out in the world. And he puts in time, serious time into learning every day. And he knew how to learn. But remember, this is a guy who left yeshiva when he was like 18, 19 years old. It's not what you think. You know, you think like nowadays somebody's in kollel and this and that. No. He's out on his own. He was a smart guy. And like I say, he put time into it. But he wasn't planning to have any kind of, a participation. Now, Vilna during his time, although he doesn't write it, is Hutzig gekocht, was a city of tremendous strife for two reasons. First, you had the fight between the Hasidim and the Misnagdim. That's exactly what happened in the 1770s, 80s, and 90s during the lifetime of the Grah. So the city was really torn. Families were torn in half. And huge fights, which got into fist fights and things like this over that. And he's living right through there. He's a Misnagdim. And then, in addition to that, you had the dirty fights of the Rabbanus, which I think I mentioned in the past. There was a guy who was stooped in to be the Av Bezin of Vilna, and then the others didn't like him, and then that led to big, big fights in the community for really about 30 years, 20, 30 years, and ended up in the Polish courts, I kid you not, and it was a Chilul Hashem Shein Kamo, the arguments about Rabbi Shmuel ben Avigdor, and the Vilna Gaon was a little bit of a bit player in this role, and he was attacked. It was a messy and dirty time to live in Vilna, even though in some respects it's a glorious time. So here he's a businessman, and being a business, listen closely, I'm going to say, being a business person, he brought the mentality of the businessman to learning. That's a good thing I'm saying, not a bad thing. What do I mean by the mentality of the business person to learning? He's not so flagging. He's not learning a little here, learning that. A business person has to have a business plan. You have to keep track of your inventory. You have to manage your accounts. You have to be extremely masudr, because if you're not masudr, if you're not well organized, you lose money. Simple as that. If you don't keep track of your merchandise and of your contracts and of your business correspondence and all the other things like this, if you can't make it, you understand? You just cannot make it. So a person that has a natural tendency to be all over the place, to flog, stay in kollel somewhere where it doesn't matter what you do because, you know, either way, you'll still be the same thing. If you want to be in the real world, as they say, in business, you have the discipline of the marketplace. So he brings that to his way of learning, and therefore his learning is very much oriented in the direction of halach l'maisa, which is a certain style of learning. And even though you can see from his writings that he knew how to learn lumdus and popol and all that kind of stuff, no question about it, because he has some of those writings, but his main focus was to be very practical. A business person has to be very practical, and practical in Yiddishkeit means you know the halach l'maisa. Now what happened was that after he was 30-some years in business. So imagine, a guy shows up at the age of 20 and becomes a merchant. I don't know where he got the capital. maybe from his father, maybe from his in-laws. And then, you know, he was spent 3 decades in the world of business. Just think about who he interacts with and all that. But in addition to that, he was always had an atiya for halacha l'maisa. And I think he was sort of unofficially from time to time in the talking to the Dayanim on the Beis Din. You know what I mean? He's a player in the world of lamdas, of halacha l'maisa. So when a shaila showed up, what can I say? He's not sitting in the back shooting the bull with somebody. He's up front shooting the bull with the people sitting in the mizrafot. And what does it mean, shooting the bull, mizrafot? He's talking to the dayan. What kind of interesting shaila do you have on Pesach time? What new issue happened in Yeridea? What new divorce problem happened? He just likes to talk about this, you understand? And he's hocking and learning in that way. So that's a pretty good level to be shooting the bull with. Anyway, as happens in the biographies of all these famous rabbinical figures from the past, he went broke. The business in Europe at that time, like today, is up and down. And it was right in the middle of the Napoleonic Wars, of the French Revolutionary Wars. The situation in Eastern Europe was very volatile. And I don't know exactly what happened, but it's totally in that kind of situation. You can make a lot of money, you can lose a lot of money. And he went broke. So for 30 years, he was well-to-do, and he made it, and then he lost it. Now, if this is 1800, so he's 52. It's possible to, you know, pull your bootstraps up and start all over again from scratch at 52, but it ain't easy, right? Agreed? 52 is not easy to start all over again. And so in this situation, his friends and others, the guys he used to hock with, said, I guess, you should accept an official salaried position here in Vilna. The Vilna going to die 3 years before in 1797. And you're obviously a halacha guy, and we can use you on the Beis Din. Won't pay a lot of money, but it pays enough to make a living. And that's what he did. So for the last 20 years of his life, from 1800 to 1820, when he was 52 to 72, that's when he served as what we'd say to a rav or a dayan in Vilna. That's what he did for a living. So as a person who brought a wealth of real experience from life in the world of business, and he only entered the world of rabbinic literature in his 50s, and he wrote his famous books in his 50s and 60s. Because remember, he died at 70 or 72, whatever. So it's just an interesting situation. Nobody ever heard of him. And clearly, he looked around, and I'm telling you what he says in his Hakdama to the Chayyotim. And he happened to be an excellent writer. That's one of the reasons that's why I like him, and many other people do also. He's an excellent writer. A lot of people are big Talmid Chacham that can't write to save their life. And so you have to figure out what does he mean over here and how what's going. And then, you know, and a lot of the Mefarshim from Shulchan Aruch sometimes are unclear. It makes it difficult to penetrate what they do. He knew this. And he says, in this very interesting intro to the Chayyotim, which is very long and everybody should read it. You have a lot of fun if you read it. Because first of all, he's a very good writer, and second of all, his Hebrew is easy. And he said, I'm looking around, and the Welt doesn't know anything. As I said before, with exceptions, most people out there, they don't know what to do on Shabbos and Yontif and Davening and Kashrus and everything. They just follow what they saw their parents do. You understand? They just saw what their parents do. And the yeshiva system, he says, stinks. And guys learn. But then they hit 15, 16, 17, they see it, and they know anything, and they say, heck with it, as he puts it. Nar ben yud zayin shana, yud kai shana, mashlech divrei Torah achir gevo, zemi toch adchak, v'zemi toch arvacha. Right? You know, and I know exactly what he's talking about. You know, a guy learns, and then what do you know? And I'm talking about specifically in the area of halacha l'maisa, because he didn't learn the gemaras and the sugyas to know what the din is, to work it out to the end. They just learn for lumdas. And you feel lousy if you say, I spent so much time on this and the other, and I don't control anything. I don't have anything that I know well. It's a psychologically devastating. And as a result, he said that looking around Vilna and the other places, I see that the Ganze Welt doesn't know the Shulchan Aruch. How would they? It's too hard of a book for 99% to master. In order to know a din, you have to be able to read the Shulchan Aruch. And first of all, a lot of things are out of place. You have to know this here and then compare it with something it says over there. Then you have to know the stuff on the side of the Shulchan Aruch. Who out there, seriously, even today, who out there can read the Magen Avraham, the Taz, and all the other things? And we live in a time when a lot of people have yeshiva education. Nobody at that time had yeshiva education. I'll repeat it. In Vilna in 1800, nobody had yeshiva education, which is exactly why, 4 years later, somebody named Chaim Volozhin, you've heard of him, started yeshiva because he said there's no learning going on in any kind of organized yeshiva way. Now, we all think the Vilna Gaon was such an era, Dor Day and all the rest of it. No, it was not. For a few tiny group at the top, it was. But for the Hamon Ham, it certainly was not. And so, Chayyotim, in the best Maimonidean tradition, meaning I want to help the public, he said like this, the only way to solve the situation is to do an art scroll. Now I'm talking art scroll Vilna 1800, not art scroll in America today. So it's not going to be in English and another language. It'll be in Hebrew, but it'll be in the simplest possible Hebrew. And he has a long introduction in which he says, I am writing a book for which boils down the whole Shulchan Aruch Chaim into simple words and an easy organized format, and it's much smaller than the whole Shulchan Aruch Chaim. And this is what he called the Chayyotim. And he is a businessman, and so it's really funny. His introductions are like advertisements, go buy my book. Nothing wrong with what I'm saying, you just usually don't find it. And like a businessman, the introductions are very well organized. I just want to read you a tiny bit to show you how cool he is. He says, this is a book that everybody should buy, this is a safer, and there's a lot of toelas for it. And he gives you 7 paragraphs. HaToelas Echad, Afilu Nar, Ben Yud Gimel Shom, Yachal Lomad, Ohavim Lios Baki Berubo, Kumbedini Shulchok, Bizman Muat. He said, even a 13-year-old kid who has a little bit of Kishranus, or certainly has a Rebbe, can go through the whole Shulchan Aruch, or a Chaim, which would take a regular Masha, Tzarech Talmud Vosik, Yigi Rabba Kamashonim, which if a guy actually learned the Shulchan Aruch itself, with the Magen Avraham and the Taz and all the other things like that, it would take him a long time, and even then, many years. And I can shorten this. See, it's a businessman. It's efficiency expert. You get my book, you can knock off the whole thing in less than a year. Much less than a year. Number two, here's another good audience, not only 13-year-old kids. Osam balabatim sh'ola parnosa kovat alein kashe yenuchamat yuchal umad ki loshen kal lahavi mod mevor kol dover kol tzorko shein tzorko lahami bo. Yitzrich l'damas milsa milsa. There's the class of what we call balabatim who have to work for a living. They ain't got no time to go to the Shulchan Aruch. Give me a break. Go tell a balabas who has to work from early in the morning to late in the evening. That's how it was in Europe. To scrounge together to make a living. He's got the time to now sit down and go through, for example, all the laws involving Yom Kippur, who can eat, who can't eat, the Kosevas Hagas and all the rest of it, let alone Erevin, Shabbos, Tefillah for that matter, Brachas. Give me a break. And with my book, you can. Number three, Afa Baalabatim Alumdin, Shir Gefes B'chol Yom. Even those who know how to learn Gemara Shitosis, what they used to call in Europe a Chevra Shas. But Kosev Ashach B'yordei, She'enim Yotzim Ki Tzichon Lumad Halachas Pesukas. Meaning, the guy who goes to the Chevra Shas never learns Halacha L'maisa. Not in those days. You learn Gemara. You have a Gemara class, like we say today at Daf Yomi. Great. What's so great about Daf Yomi? Grab him, he's fine. But I'm just saying, you're not going to learn any dinim from that way. And if the time you have for learning is devoted to the Daf Yomi, which is the case even today, isn't that? Am I not right? The time a person has, and by the way, it's great. Here's a balabas, or anybody, and he's like, I'm putting in my hour in shul, my hour and a half, whatever, every day, do Daf Yomi. That's fantastic. Soon they're going to have the same mashas. But where do you learn your halachas from, right? Where do you get that from? And as a mangorlim lasik b'shulchan aruch ha'sonim, and you get my book, you can do it 1, 2, 3. So he's taking you in a pattern. The 13-year-old kid, the balabas is working too hard, the Daf Yomi guy. Number four, I feel alumdim shulchan aruch. You do a mach m'shein b'vur b'shulchan tamadin, menatomid rabbanu sefer chosim, yigiyas rabbis line b'divri achronim. Even the guys that learn shulchan aruch, a lot of times he said, let's be honest, you don't know what you're reading. You don't know some things, the rise of rabbanon, it's out of order. Maybe you didn't understand this particular Magen Avraham. Maybe you didn't get that shach. It was my book, you can put it all together. Number five, Halamdim Madibri Moganav. Yadu Shadvarma Mukimod, Yesho Tos Obraharbe. Vesefer Shali Yimsum Amargo Benachas. Even those who are. So you see how he goes in order from the kid to the Balabas to the Daf Yomi guy to the guy who even learned Shulchan Aruch but realize how difficult it is to next to the level who learns the Mefarshim from the Shulchan Aruch, like the Moganav. And what do you call it? He says, Moganav is hard to understand in a lot of places, but I make it easy for you. And then he goes, number six, Af Muflogi Atomara Yim Tsudinim. Even people do not learn and are Dayan Men Poskim, I have it organized so easy for you, it'll be Machai to read my book. And then he has a few more. I'm just giving an example of this you actually don't find, where somebody basically puts out an ad for his book, and he did the same thing with the Chachmas Sodom. So the Chai Yodim is a fantastic book. I'll just tell you a story. There's a guy in town who asked me the other day what to learn or read or something like that. And I said, yeah, go look up the Chai Yodim. And he wrote me a text back the other day, Avram. And he said, this is amazing. This is fantastic. He doesn't even need English. Wow, I should have known this long ago. And the Chai Yodim is so great and all the rest of it. I said, well, you know, wake up and smell the coffee. Chai Yodim is a fantastic work. It is. Even though it sounds funny what I'm saying, but I don't mean it to be funny, it is pretty much the beginning of the what you call the art school process, which is you take the hard stuff and try to make it easy. Again, it's not in English, it's not with the footnotes and all the rest of it, like the art school, of course, but it's the beginning of the popularization of the Shulchan Aruch. Specifically, he's in 1800, so he set himself to make available to the reader the Shulchan Aruch, which is the Mechaber and the Ramah, and the two guys on the side, the Magen Avraham and the Taz, and the El Yerabo. El Yerabo is a commentary on the Levush, and the Chai Yodim is a big fan of the Levush. I don't want to get too technical, I'll lose you. But let's put it this way. The main halachics from there were at that time. And basically, he wrote this, number one, to be a popular work that anybody can read. Number two, to be a cheater book. Nothing wrong with that. And number three, to be something that a person could get Sipak HaNefesh, because he has in his introduction, if you read a page of this every day, then, you know, by half a year, you've already done it. By the end of the year, you chazed the whole Shulchan Aruch over twice, or something like that. And, again, it's a businessman's approach. And there's nothing wrong with this. You know, this way, you can know the Shulchan Aruch and know the rules of Judaism, because most people don't know the rules of Judaism, and they get things wrong. And in the Chai Yodim, and the Chachmas Sodom, by the way, one of the a historian of social history has a gold mine. I thought of writing an article on this myself. You can go almost every page or every few pages, and you'll see the Chai Yodim say like this. This is what the halacha is, not like the Velt does. Everybody does that and that, and then they're all wrong. And it's full of social criticism of Judaism improperly practiced by the Hamonam, because they just follow what the parents did. And first of all, the parents got it wrong, or sometimes you think this is what your mother did, but it's actually not what you did. And also, it gets mixed up with superstitions, popular superstitions. So, the Chai Yodim is really cool in that kind of way. It's very frum. He puts a lot of mussar in there and all that, but not in a, I would say, not in a heavy way. You know, not in a turn-off way. On speaking of that subject, this is, I'm giving this, and it's the art side, just before Yom Kippur, right? Yom Kippur's coming up. If you want to see something fantastic, you read his intro to Yom Kippur, which is a long essay, and it's very good, and very clear, and it's kind of Kabbalistic. Somebody once pointed out that the Chai Yodim, who's a Misnaga, has a lot of Kabbalah in the book, which is true, and the Alter Rebbe, the Shneur Zamladi, doesn't, and which is funny. It's more dry halacha. And there are theories why that is, but I'm not going to get into the theories right now. Let me just say that if you read this intro to Yom Kippur, first of all, it's very interesting, and every person, in my humble opinion, ought to be familiar with this. It's not simply basic stuff. The reason I say it's Kabbalistic is he says this thing, I think I mentioned here in the earlier podcast, because I've mentioned many times, I always like it. He says that watch out for your Kabbalists that you take on, because you have to know if they're coming from the Yetzer Tov or the Yetzer Hara. If you do something and only lasts a short time, it may possibly be the Yetzer Hara encouraging you to do this, because the nature of evil, according to the Kabbalah, is it has like a klipa, and you know, surrounds the good things with a shell of evil. And every time you do a sin, you create one of these klipa things. But the evil, according to the Kabbalah, evil, the klipa is a parasitical, has no life of its own, it only sucks out the nutrients. So let's say, for argument's sake, you know a guy, and he's bad. So in Kabbalistic terminology, you say he's surrounded by a klipa. But the klipa is nourishing off his mitzvahs. But what happens when he stops doing all mitzvahs? Then it'll die, just like a cancer will die if the person dies, because it's all parasitical, has no nutrients on its own. And so the evil will then encourage the person, he says, quoting a famous maggid or whatever, to go and do some mitzvahs. But it's not really for the person's benefit. It's to supply more nutrients to the klipa. You get it? So to use English language today, if you find somebody who never goes to shul in the morning, and then all of a sudden out of nowhere, for a month, he finds no trouble waking up and going to shul, but then he reverts back to square one and doesn't go to shul anymore. What happened? How do you explain that? Now, from modern secular perspective, you do psychologically or in terms of medicine or whatever. From a Kabbalistic perspective, you say the Yetzer Hara was telling him to go to shul because the Yetzer Hara needs some mitzvahs to feed upon. And then when he got enough nutrients, then he said, all right, back to business and stay in bed and don't go to shul. And he compares this to fattening a goose before you shecht it and that sort of thing. All I'm saying is it's very original. And he has a whole interpretation of the Yoshan of Agana, which is kind of cool. And of course, as part of his essay to Dechayonim on the pre-Yom Kippur, the Seretz Meitshuva, he put in there, he wrote the Tefillah Zaka that everybody says. He is the author of the Tefillah Zaka, which is like a must that everybody reads on every Yom Kippur, of course. So he's like a major fun. And if you ever read the Tefillah Zaka, which everybody does, it's really written very simple, very cool. He has the gift of the gab. He has the power of writing, which is not everywhere. I'll say more in general, he has the power, the Chayyim does, of synthesis, which you don't find in a lot of Sfarim. You do occasionally. What I mean is, certain writers, like the Rambam and others who copied him, not many, had the power of taking a whole bunch of different disparate things and putting them together in one klal. And that's unbelievable koach. And the Chayyim is one of those. Darach HaShulchan is another. Which means that when he deals with a subject, let's say Erevin, let's say Shabbos, let's say Yom Kippur, let's say, I don't know, you know, any area of halacha, first you have to know a couple of basic kolim. What's the derises? What's the rabbanans? What are the exceptions? You know, this and that and the other. He'll put that in the beginning introductory paragraphs. And after that, he'll get down to the details. It makes it a million times easier for the reader. Now you know what's flying. Basically, it's an independent Judaism. If you have just the Chayyim, you can go through the whole Archaim if you wish to, and you know what the heck is flying. And you have and literally, you have an understanding of the Inyan. So I can't praise it high enough. Always been a fan of Chayyim. Can't say I was always a fan of Chayyim. To be perfectly honest, when I was a kid, yeah, the Kitzur Shulchan and the Chayyim, neither of them had the kudos, and the Chayyim was more dense, and I rarely looked at it. You know, I don't remember in the old TA whether they did that, and I think they did the Kitzur Shulchan, which came later and tried to dumb down the Chayyim. But, I mean, in a good way. But you're going to laugh at this, but I don't care. About 35 years ago, more, I went once to the old Perns, and there I saw, to my shock, I don't know if I was married at the time, I can't remember, they had Chayyim with the Kudos, it just came out from Israel. I said, really? And I bought it, it was like one big volume, now they publish in several volumes, they try to cheat you. And it was amazing, I got hooked on it, and I like read it from cover to cover. It's the Chayyim Menucha with the Nishmas on them at the bottom. That's his Lumdish stuff. I won't talk about that today because no time in this podcast. Maybe there is. I'll see. And then I became a super fan. And my original copy of the Chayyim is all marked up and this and that and the other. And that led me to the Chacham Son eventually. He is really good because I didn't know all this stuff at that time. You know, I learned like anybody else. Like, you know, a little of this, you know, a little of that. Who can tie it all together the way he can? And he's really great. This is something you do not find in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, by the way. So, for example, if you want to get Hilchos Shabbos, just off the top of my head, I'm just talking up to, as I always do. If you go to Chayyim, he will take you through all the 39 Melachos. You understand? One by one. And with the necessary introductory paragraphs, a chapter to the beginning, the basic column, you have to know Hilchos Shabbos. Who knows that? Unless you know it. You see? Who knows that? In addition, he's got Hilchos Yontif, and he takes you through the 39 Melachos as far as Hilchos Yontif is concerned, as a separate business. It makes it easier on the average reader, you understand? It makes it easier. And so you can't say, well, do all the work yourself. Not everybody's built that way. You get it? So the Chayyim is the hero of the dumbbells, but I mean that in the best possible sense. And let me tell you something. When that book came out, it became a bestseller. He wrote it for what I would call the average balabas with a little bit of learning. That's who it's written for, because it's in Hebrew. So if you can't read Hebrew, you can't understand it. But if you have a certain amount of education, but you never were anything special in school, you weren't the best guy, and you're not going to be the next Vilna Gaon or anything like that, then that's your market. And he can, and like I said before, you have some ideas, but you're going to have it Masudar, all the rest of the Chayyim's the one to do it for you. So he published his book in 1810, when he was 60. And he, like I say, gives his whole introduction, why he did it, and all the rest of it. In 1814, he extended it to the Yardea, which is actually even harder, as the Chochma Sodom. And again, this is a book I never paid attention to until somewhere else. After I read the Chayyanim, then I said, wow, I got to throw myself in the Chochma Sodom. And that's the Yardea, but that's not for everybody. I'm not exactly 100% sure why he did it, although I'm delighted that he did do it. And I'm still waiting each time you're going to laugh. I'm always looking whenever new Sfarim come out, whenever I go to Israel. Did they come out with the Chochma Sodom Menuchot? But that's the whole Yerodea. You know, the Isser Hetter, the Kashrus, the Nida, the Avelis, and all the rest of it. And again, with the very absolutely necessary introductory paragraphs, which are synthetic in nature, Chochma Sodom has never been as popular as the Chayyanim. The Chay, for obvious reasons, the average guy out there has to know Hilchos Shabbos. The average guy out there, hopefully, even wants to know, you know, Hilchos Pesach with all the ins and outs of that. And even Hilchos Erevin. The average guy out there doesn't even know the Halacha is a Malicha. You know what I'm saying? The average guy out there doesn't necessarily need to know the Halacha of, even Tarubas. I mean, to be honest, the average person out there. You ask a shout from somebody else. I mean, that's a job for us, but for the rabbi. Nevertheless, he tried to popularize it, which means that he's trying to help the guy who's learning for a Bechina Yordea, I imagine, to do so. As a matter of history, it's just interesting. The Chayyanim took off, the Chochma Sodom did not. I don't mean in a bad way. I'm just saying Chayyanim had a phenomenal success in Eastern Europe. It was translated many, many times. I mean, it was published many times. It was translated into Yiddish in Lithuania. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter fell in love with the book precisely because, being such a frummy, he's like this, how do we get the Hamon Am to learn Torah? How do we get the Hamon Am to, have access to the ideas, especially in the case of Yisrael Salanter and the Kelmer Magid, they had a campaign to give dignity to the lower middle class in the Jewish world in Lithuania and Belarus. And that means the worker, the artisan, the craftsman, notice the shoemaker, the tailor, the balagola, those kind of people who had some little knowledge of Ivrit, not much, and they started schools and societies and shuls. There are many shuls in Lithuania and elsewhere called Chayyanim and Poltetic, especially the Kelmer Magid was into this. And there's a fight to Haskalah, and he said, you know, if you go to a regular shul in Eastern Europe, a few rich and learned Balabatim ran the show. They get the aliyahs, they get the kibbutim, everything is designed to suit their purposes, and everybody else can go to the devil. That's the plain, simple way it was. And so the average guy is alienated from Judaism. And these Musaris, like the Kelmer Magid and others, they said, no, should start separate shuls and find those texts that you can teach, have a class in, and teach the public, and build up their knowledge level. It's what we call in English middle brow education. Nothing wrong with it. It's a fantastic thing. And they started many, many societies, chevras and shuls, and you went to Eastern Europe, I mean, 100 years ago, 120 years ago, everywhere there was like a chevra chayonim. And this not necessarily for the big rabbis, because they would say, oh, it's beneath our dignity to use a cheater book. But it's for a lot of people. And what's wrong with that? You actually know what to do on Shabbos. Before Yom Kippur, they would learn Allah's Yom Kippur. And with the chayonim, it's easy as pie. And same thing with all the different Allah sukkahs is coming up and things like this. And so they saw it as a social, social reform mechanism. Isn't that interesting? And the Chayyanim achieved this canonical status, which was only knocked out from the Mishnah Berurah. I mean, when the Mishnah Berurah took off, which is into the 20th century, and that's part of the rise of the Mishnah Berurah, listen to this, is part of the decline of the class of Frum Balabatim, because that just withered away before Hitler. You know, in Eastern Europe, everybody became not Frum. And they were replaced by only the B'nai Torah, but the Yeshivalites. So if, you know, the whole only people learning Halacha is not the Balabatim out there, but the Yeshiva people, so then that took off the Mishnah Berurah, because he became the big thing in the Yeshiva world. And now in America and in Israel, all the Balabatim are Yeshiva guys. And so, Yeshiva background whatsoever, so it's a Mishnah Berurah world. But even today, you could do very well. I would recommend most, in fact, I do, depending on who I'm talking to, most people I recommend If you want a halacha, I said, do the chayyanim, because they'll get a lot out of it. And the truth of the matter is, even the Chachma Sodom, it's just not so many people are interested in that. There's a guy who translated some of the Chachma Sodom into English, believe it or not. A cone, I saw it on Nida and Yerdea. What was it? Taruvas, things like that. And it's very good. It's very good. Again, if somebody wanted to do it, that's a way of doing it. But that's of a different nature. So as you can see, I'm a big fan of the Chayyanim. I would, he also wrote this book, but was published posthumously, Zichru Torah Moshe, which is all the ins and outs of Hilchos Shabbos, but again, with a very, very interesting Hakdama at great length. He was into the long Hakdamas, which he gives, I forget what it is, a story about a prince who was lost on an island or something like that. It was, not your typical type of Hakdama. And that's good, but to be perfectly honest, if you have the Chayyanim, you don't need the Zichru Torah Moshe. The last thing I want to mention, because the hour is late, even though I could go on and on, as you can see, I'm an enthusiast at the Chayyanim, and I think he made a big difference in Jewish history, is this really fantastic thing that probably you don't know about, I would recommend very highly to people, is the Kitzur Charedim that the Chayyanim composed. It's great for learning in shuls and places like that. There is a book called the Sefer Charedim, back from the 1500s, in Tzfas, in the time of the Mechaber. You know the Sefer Charedim because he wrote Yedid Nefesh, Rachamanya. He wrote Yedid Nefesh. But that's all people know. They don't know. There's a separate thing called the Sefer Charedim. And he had a weird approach in which he tries to organize all halachas by parts of the body. You know, many different principles of organization. The Chayyanim has his own. He doesn't exactly follow the Shulchan Aruch. He has his own. The Sefer Charedim, back in the 1500s, he said, you know, here are the mitzvahs you do with your eyes. Here are the mitzvahs you do with your mouth. Here are the mitzvahs you do with your feet. Here's the derises with the feet. Here's the rabbana with the feet and all that. It's a certain shtick. But meanwhile, he goes through the tayig mitzvahs and the other halachas as well. So the Sefer Charedim was a halacha book. I don't say it's comprehensive, but it's very interesting. But it's lengthy. It's lengthy. The Chayyanim, being who he was, he made a kitzur of the Charedim, which is a few pages. And, you know, here are all the mitzvahs with the eyes, the derises with the eyes, the derises with the ases with the eyes, derisa. I say the los ases, the derisa, the drabonas with the eyes. Here's the ears. Here's the nose. All the rest of it. I know it sounds funny what I'm saying, but take the trouble to look this up and find out where they have a kitzur charedim. The Chofetz Chaim used to learn this between Mincha Ma'ariv and Eishol, and I see totally why. You can go through. You get a lot of ideas out of that. You go through all these derisa and drabonas, and a lot of them you didn't even know. And what the charedim did is pull from all over Shas. You know he's like that. And so, oh yeah, that's takadin. Oh, yeah, I didn't realize that. And you just learn a lot. So it's a very productive kind of limud. Everything the Chayyanim touched, in my opinion, was productive. He wrote a book about the laws of Eretz Yisrael, which he published in 1812. I'm not exactly sure, but it could be, maybe, due to the fact that from Vilna came the first Zionists. You know, the Talmidei Agra, at that time, moved to Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yisrael of Shklov and people like that wrote the Pasach Shulchan. And they were from his chevra, so maybe that stirred him to write the halachas of Eretz Yisrael. I'm not sure. And he writes about Prague in the old days. I remember he said Prague, they do Shushan Purim because they hold, Prague held that it goes back to Achashverosh, to Yehoshua ben Nun's time, believe it or not. And all kind of other, yeah, all kind of strange and interesting things that pop in the Chayyanim. Anyway, the hour is very late. I've gone longer than usual, and I've only done a half or a third of what you could talk about the Chayyanim. The writings are very, very interesting. But if as a result of what I just said, you read the Chayyanim's intro to Yom Kippur this week, you will see exactly what I'm talking about, and you will agree that this is a home run. And with that, I wish you a good week.
For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.